The Waking Dream. I spent days sitting before the clavier after that first dream, trying in vain to find the perfect melody I had heard. But no matter what I did, I couldn't get it to sound quite right.
"What is it that you keep playing over and over?"
Wulfril asked me whenever he came to watch me practice. "Just something I heard in a dream," I told him. He looked thoughtfully at me, his eyes wide as if searching for the melody too.
"But the notes are not the same, are they?"
he said. I still don't know how he knew, except that he must have guessed by the frown on my face.
"No, not the same," I replied. "Because what I heard in my dream wasn't real."
Weeks passed, then months, and soon my memory of it blurred. My attempts turned scattered, the tune shifting until it became unrecognizable. Eventually, I let myself believe that maybe it hadn't been such a perfect melody after all. The seasons drifted, from ice to rain, to sun to wind. The hills that hemmed in Salzburg became white with snow, then green with new buds, then orange and gold, then white once more. My mother fixed my dresses as I grew. I began to hear murmured conversation between my parents at night, about how soon I would no longer be a child, about marriage, and what prospects I had, how they would fill my dowry chest. Outside, the New Year's rifles fired, and the star singers visited our door, slapping their arms against the Christmas cold, their voices warm with good cheer. Here and there, I'd catch a snippet of music in the streets that would just barely touch the edges of my memory, reminding me of something from a faraway dream. Papa continued my lessons as I aged, filling the notebook he had bought me with minuets, and I continued to practice the pieces. No more guests came to listen to me. Most days I was glad for it. The clavier was my cocoon of a world, my haven. In here, I could listen to my secrets in peace. But at night, I lay awake and replayed the music in my mind, my thoughts circling the wish I had spoken from my heart. In my dreams, I was haunted by the way my father leaned away from me after a lesson, the weight of his disappointment that I couldn't grasp what he was offering me. I wondered what it might feel like to fade into the air one day, whether my father would notice it. There was only so much time before I would leave childhood behind, and he would stop teaching me entirely. One morning, when Papa finished his lessons with me and I closed my notebook carefully, Wulfril climbed onto the clavier bench beside me and reached his hands toward the keys. He had grown too, although perhaps not as much as a boy his age should. His eyes still looked enormous in the small, plump set of his face, and when he turned toward the music stand, I could see his long lashes against his cheeks haloed in the light. He was a fragile child, both in body and health. It made me want to curl my arm protectively around his shoulders. "Wulfril," I chided gently,
"Papa does not want you to play yet."
My father said he was too young, his fingers too small and tender to press the keys properly. He did not want him to damage his hands. For now, selfishly, I was glad to keep music lessons something between only my father and me. Wulfril seemed to stare through my notebook, his eyes yearning for somewhere far away. His lashes turned up for a moment as he looked at me.
"Please, Nanril,"
he said, scooting closer to me so that he pressed against my side.
"Can't you teach me a little? You're the best player in the world."
He had been asking me this for weeks, climbing onto my bench after Papa had left for the day, and each time I had turned him away. But this morning, his expression was particularly coaxing, and my mood was light, my hands warm and sure against the keys. I laughed at him.
"Surely you don't think I'm better than Papa," I replied.
When I looked at him again, he seemed serious.
I promise I won't tell.
Whatever a promise meant to a small boy. Still, the sweetness of his face made me surrender.
You are too far away, I said at last. Let's move the bench closer, yeah?
Everything about him illuminated. His eyes, his smile, his posture. He let out a soft squeak under his breath as I drew him close to the clavier, then helped him position his fingers against the keys. His hands looked so tiny against mine that I held them in my palms a beat longer as if to protect them. Only when he made a sound, pushing me to move aside, did I release him.
This is a chord, I said, stretching my own hand out beside his.
I played a harmonious trio of notes for him, each key spaced one out from the next. At first, all together, then one after the other. He watched me in fascination. He was still small enough that he had to use two hands to play it properly, the thumb of his left hand holding down the lowest of the three notes, while two fingers of his right hand tapped out the middle and highest notes. E, G sharp, B. He listened curiously to it, tilting his head this way and that at the sound. I smiled and played another chord. He followed my example. This was when the first sign appeared. I don't think that anyone else could have noticed it. Not even Papa, who never had the patience to see these things. When Wulfril pressed down on the keys, one of the notes that he struck sounded very slightly out of tune. He frowned, then played it again. Again, the note came out at the wrong pitch. I leaned toward him, about to tell him that the string must need tightening. But the frustration that clouded his gaze made me pause. He pressed the key a third time, thinking that it might fix itself, and when it didn't, he hummed the right pitch in the back of his throat, as if he couldn't understand how the same note could be correct in his mind and incorrect outside of it. I knew, in that moment, that he had a remarkable ear, sharper than our father's, sharper than Herr Schachtner's, perhaps even sharper than mine, at least at that age. Already he understood the sound of perfection. I now think this was how he first learned that the world was an imperfect place.
Very good, Wulfril, I said to him.
He paused to give me a relieved smile.
You hear it too, he said.
And in that moment, I felt the warmth of his presence in my world. A second soul who understood. We played a few more sets of chords before Wulfril finally leaned away, looked from the clavier to the window's golden light, then back to me.
Can you tell me a story?
He asked absently. So, he was in a whimsical mood. I glanced toward our parents' bedroom, as if Papa could still hear us, even though he had left hours ago. Mama had gone with Sebastian to the clothier. No one else was home.
All right,
I said, and closed my eyes to think of something. I still don't know why it returned to me then. Perhaps it was the chords we had played together, which still seemed to hang in the air. But there, in the darkness, I found myself hearing the achingly pristine music from my dream years ago. The memory resurfaced of a beautiful young face that I couldn't quite recall. Of waking, with my hand outstretched before me, yearning to stay longer. I opened my eyes. The sun was slanting against the floors just so, and a new haze hung about the light in the room. We were bathed in its glow.
There is a forest,
I said, looking down at my brother,
that surrounds a kingdom.
Wulfril grinned at that. He clapped his hands.
What kingdom? He asked. What forest?
This was the game between us. He would ask me questions. I would invent answers for him, and slowly our story would grow.
"It is a place where moss and flowers coat the floor," I said in a hushed voice. "Trees grow in thick bundles. But, Vufril, they are not trees like what we know. What are they like?"
Now my dream returned in glittering pieces. The moon, the sea, the black line of woods, and the strange shapes of the trees. The boy walking through the seafoam. I lowered my voice and gestured him closer. My imagination wandered free, constructing the rest of what this fantasy of a land might be.
"They stand upside down, with their roots pointing up to the sky and their leaves curling against the ground, forming deep pools of rainwater along the lone path. You must be careful, for they feed on those who slip and fall in."
Vufril's eyes turned round as coins.
"Do you think ghosts live there? All manner of creatures do."
I pondered on what to tell him next.
"They are not what they seem. Some are good and kind. Others will tell you they are one thing when they are another. You must follow the good ones, Vufril, and if you do, they will lead you to a shore with sand white as snow."
Vufril had forgotten everything else around him now. He stared up at me with such an intent face that I laughed at his attention. My fingers danced across the clavier's keys as I played a few light notes for him. To my pleasure, every note drew his admiration, as if he could not get enough of this world I'd chosen to share with him.
"Come here,"
I suddenly said, putting my arm around him.
"I know a piece that sounds just like this forest, if you want to hear it."
Vufril giggled as I turned to a blank page in my notebook, careful not to crinkle the edges of the paper. I took a deep breath, then attempted yet again to reconstruct the music I'd heard in my sleep. I thought of the snippets of sounds from the streets that would awaken my memories, and added them to the melody. Note by note, a strange song emerged from another world. Vufril's fingers danced in the air. He hummed the tune under his breath, his pitch perfect, and a part of me knew that he must be the only other person in the world who could hear the same beauty I could.
"Can I play it like you, do you think? When your fingers grow a little."
I gripped the bottom of our bench, then stood and pulled it toward the clavier. Vufril's hands scooted closer to the keys.
"Would you like to try?" I asked him.
Vufril did. He mimicked my notes. And again, I found myself pausing to notice that he could remember everything I had played, that even with his small hands, he could follow along almost as if he'd been practicing with me for days. I watched him in wonder. And within that wonder, a small twinge of something, envy, fear, took root. The feeling sat cold against my chest. The wish I'd made so long ago came back to me in a sudden wave. Make them remember me. That was when it first happened. Vufril saw it before I did. He sucked in his breath and cooed in delight, and then stretched his little arms toward the open pages of my notebook. I looked at what had captured his attention. There, right on the first page, was a tiny cluster of grass blades and three beautiful white blooms of flowers, all growing from the parchment at a straight angle. I blinked, hardly believing what I was seeing. They were Edelweiss flowers, treasures of the Alps.
"Don't touch them, Vufril," I whispered, pulling his arm back. "Are they real?" he asked.
I leaned closer to inspect the strange sight. Edelweiss did not grow at such low altitudes, and certainly not out of music paper. They were flowers of the mountains, plants that men sometimes died seeking out for their beloveds. Mama once told us that the Virgin Mary herself had blessed our land with Edelweiss by dusting the mountains with stars. And yet, there they were, snow white, their petals thick and velvet, their edges hazy in the glow of the afternoon. A clean, fragile scent hung in the air. The light in the room seemed very strange now, as if perhaps we were part of a waking dream.
"They must have come from the forest," I said.
I reached one finger out. My brother made an irritated sound.
"You said not to touch them."
"Well, I'm older than you."
I let my finger skim the surface of one flower. The petal felt like the collar of my winter coat, fuzz against my fingertips. I drew my hand back. Part of the color came away when I did, leaving a streak of white across my skin like paint.
"I'm going to tell Papa," he said.
I grabbed his hand.
"No, don't. Please, Wolfram. Papa will think I've been filling your head with silly stories."
He looked at me for a moment, his expression wavering between emotions. I patted his cheeks gently in the way that our mother did. It was this that finally won him over. I saw the resistance go out of him, the sway of his body toward me as he savored the affection. He scooted back beside me. I rubbed the streak on my skin between two fingers, watching as it smeared and faded away into the air. Perhaps it had never been there at all. When we glanced back to the notebook's open pages, the Edelweiss had disappeared. Beside me, Wolfram held his breath, waiting for the dream to return. My hands trembled. But that was not all. When my finger had touched the flower petal, I had heard a distinct musical note. No, something more than that. A sound too perfect to be from this world. A secret. I could tell by my brother's expression that he had not heard it. I played it over in my mind until I realized the note was not a note at all, but a sweet and beautiful voice that bubbled with bright laughter. I knew immediately that it belonged to the boy by the ocean. It spoke only one sentence. "I can help you, Nonril, if you help me."